Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 100. 100 episodes ago, just about 3 years ago, a little over, we changed what was the Bobcast to Dome Theory. We were still at Syracuse at the time, hadn't graduated yet. My man Taylor McLeod and I joined forces and started up what's become some national NBA coverage here, a little bit of music, a little bit of pop culture at times still as we started the original Bobcast, which is now 6 years old, over 6 years old now, which is crazy. And that was sort of my first project here at CLNS Media, and it continues today. I think the original Bobcast had 100-something, so we're over 200 episodes now, well over 200 episodes of what this podcast has been. Interviews, NBA coverage, Celtics, and more. Just me. You know, what I do and what I'm interested in, along with a bunch of great guests throughout the years here on this show. And we're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming over the next 100 and more here. Hopefully, some new segments and guests and additions of the show, as well as many more per week than what we've done over the last couple of years here through the pandemic. So just appreciate everybody listening in, people who came over from the Garden Report, people who've been here from day one, especially. I just appreciate you, and we're going to talk some Kings today. How about that? I can guarantee that in a couple hundred episodes of this podcast, we have not done a Kings show, but we're going to do it today because I am intrigued by this team, and they're in Boston today as we record this. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope you had a good one. Of course, big football day. And that football weekend continues. Bet Online, our good partners here, who've been here, I want to say, since day one. I want to say a lot of love to them. And they're great offers. None better than 50% back on your first deposit when you head over there. Right now, World Cup is going on. I just watched USA England tie. And day in, day out, this great match is going on in Qatar. Bet Online, of course, where you can find odds on all of those, as well as the winner and more. NFL futures are available now, as well as week in, week out games. A lot of good ones this weekend. NHL rolling. You got the NBA night in and night out. And when you use the code CLNS50 over there, you're going to get 50% back on your first deposit. It's betonline.ag. I love their website. Can't really call it new anymore because it's been this way for a while now. But all your sports odds, information, matchup info, player news, game trends, it's all available there. Along with live betting, free contests, and live scores for every sport and game imaginable. We got NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, golf, all available over at betonline.ag. And again, use that code CLNS50 when you sign up. Support CLNS, the Garden Report, as well as Dome Theory when you do that. That's CLNS50, BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, big shout out to Athletic Greens. Been using them 4 or 5 months now. Vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more within their whole food source powder. You throw it in your water every morning and you are on your way. You use a year's supply of immune-boosting vitamin D to get you through this winter, and that's what they're offering right now when you go to athleticgreens.com/garden, as well as 5 free travel packs, which is a great offer as well. You can get yourself a bottle. You can get this container that's going to store your Athletic Greens for you. Again, athleticgreens.com/garden and the Calm app. Use it every night going to bed. I know Joe Sway from the Garden Report loves it midday for the calm of the day and in the morning for your meditations, yoga, and more. So many ways to help relax your mental health in a stressful time of year. The Calm app is a great gift for this gift-giving season as well. 40% off. You'll find Black Friday deals that aren't as good as that, and we've been offering that for a minute over on the Calm app. You've probably used it. You've probably heard of it because it's ubiquitous. Everybody uses this. I used it before they partnered with CLNS, and the sleep sounds are my go-to. But there's a little bit of something for everyone on there, and that full library is available for 40% off when you go to calm.com/garden. I'm Bobby Manning. Brendan Nunes is up next. Kings Herald, Sacramento Bee, a Kings Pulse podcast, a big writer and reporter covering that team out there in Sacramento. And you don't want to miss a deep dive on one of the more unheralded teams in the NBA that's off to a fantastic start. So Brendan's up next. Go get a Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and more. And we will see you next week, post-game tonight, after the Kings. And we'll be back here on Dome Theory with some more guests into December. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 100. We're here. We're ready for a big Friday night matchup between the Celtics and the Kings, who, in all 100 episodes, Brendan, I don't think I've done a Kings episode. This is new. This is fresh. This team being on the national stage and one of the better teams in the league to start this year, that's different. This team has been one of the weirder franchises in the NBA for a while now. Obviously, last year they broke the NBA record for years outside of the playoffs. Couldn't even get into that 10-team field last year. And this team looks like they're going to end that streak, at least for now. A lot of good things rolling for this team, so I want to dig into them. We're going to do that here with Brendan Nunes from Kings Herald, as well as the Kings Pulse podcast. Appreciate you being here, Brendan. And what's going on with this team? Like, why are they not this weird, wacky team for once? Why does it look like this group's actually going to be good?
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Bobby. I didn't realize it's episode 100. I'm honored to be the guest for episode 100. And can't say I blame you for not having done any sort of Kings episode. Like you said, they've been, I think you said one of the weirder franchises, and I think that's a nice way to put it. But they think they've, they seem like they've put some things together. You know, I think that the coaching staff that's come in has really helped revamp things. A lot of things that have, a lot of what has to do with this offense rolling so well is Mike Brown coming in and seemingly implementing a lot of what Golden State did. There's so much ball movement within this offense, and that is primarily ran through De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, but then they have a lot of good shooters surrounded around them as well, who are high IQ players that can put the ball on the deck when they need to and make plays from there. So they're totally riding just being one of the best offenses in the league, only second to Boston Celtics.
And the contrast, because they got off to kind of a rough start before this win streak that they just ended recently. And I remember right in that first week of the preseason off that hilarious Mike Brown quote. And I don't think like the context was 100% right around it, but it just kind of hit like a Kings tone when they lost that opening night game, squandered a lead, I think, 10-point third quarter lead, got outscored 11-2 to close the game. And he said, for us tonight, I watched us do stuff in this game that we haven't done all preseason, all at training camp. Like he just didn't recognize the team that was out there opening night, and they've turned it around. Their offense is great. Like in terms of the new coaching staff coming in, like you say, Mike Brown and everything that they've brought here compared to last year, what are some of the biggest differences you're seeing in terms of how they play?
I think it's definitely the ball movement. You know, they're right towards the top of the league in the amount of passes per game. And there's an aspect of trust that I think didn't exist in years prior, like trusting that for De'Aaron, as an example, that if he gives the ball up, it will eventually come back around to him and end up in a better shot for himself and the entire offense. Like in years prior, a Buddy Hield or a Marvin Bagley could be a little bit of a ball stopper. And I think there is a decent difference in the roster as well. But when it comes to the coaching staff, I think that level of trust has been developed, not only trusting each other on the floor, but trusting the system that Mike Brown has put into place. When they lost their first four games, that was something that was talked about a lot, that coach felt like they were trending in the right direction, but they obviously needed to start get some wins. So that way the players would trust what was being preached and the system that was being put into place. And obviously that happened. They won 7 in a row. They've won 9 of their last 12, I think it is, and are totally rolling right now. So I think a lot of it has to do with there just being so much ball movement and then also a level of accountability. Mike Brown came up under Popovich and Steve Kerr and has a little bit of a just disciplinarian way of going about things. He's very much going to be holding players accountable, and I think that he has the right group of guys that respond well to that rather than you know, maybe shutting down and going into a bit of their own rhythm. Everybody seems to be trusting in what's being taught here, and it's been working recently.
So the big thing with this team and where they're going, all goes back to the Sabonis trade, and it happens a couple weeks before the deadline last year. It's about as divisive as of a trade as I can remember, in terms of people look at Sabonis coming in and saying, all right, this is a real stable veteran all-star piece that you can build around, but you give up Tyrese Halliburton, and the things he's done in Indiana since that deal have just been remarkable. I think he was the player of the week last week in the East alongside De'Aaron Fox, which was interesting. And 20 points per game, 48% efficiency. That's where he's been floating around in Indiana. He's hitting a million threes, 39%. One of the top assist guys in the league now, 10-11 pretty much every game since he's gotten there. He's just this hub of offense. And he had those flashes in Sacramento too. But now that you hand over the keys to him in Indiana, and he looks like he might be the best guy in that draft class, which is crazy to think about, Sacramento drafting a guy like that. And it's just, it's bittersweet for the Kings, because you look at Sabonis and he's awesome and he's this like stabilizing force for them in terms of how they run their offense, and they have this amazing offense, but you look at what you gave up, and it could be this guy who becomes a top 10, 15 player in this league. Like, how do you kind of look at that for the Kings almost a year later?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, very divisive at the time, and I think it's still sort of TBD, because Sabonis has totally unlocked Sacramento's offense. I think he's a very big part of why this has worked the way it was. I think you had a quote I saw earlier today of Malcolm Brogdon kind of comparing him to Al Horford, which I think is pretty spot on, just a great connector. You know, like Kevin Huerter shooting 50% from three this year, and he still gets a couple wide open looks a game because Sabonis sets amazing screens and does a great job setting up his guys. So I think it's worked out for Sacramento so far. And when it comes to Tyrese, I mean, that's somebody that I loved as a person and a player. There's a lot of talk about Malik Monk's sort of contagious personality, and I think that Tyrese has some of that as well. But there were moments with Tyrese last year where, like, I think if Tyrese could have been a part of this, and obviously there's no world where him and Sabonis would be on the same team, but I think if Tyrese was in this system, he totally would work alongside De'Aaron Fox. I think that those guys would have worked it out. I don't think that the system they had in place was the most ideal for optimizing those two guys alongside one another. And there was a lot of your turn, my turn. And it seemed like both guys were just trying to make sure the other person was comfortable rather than either one of them taking over for moments. And there were a handful of games where it was like, man, Tyrese had single digit shot attempts. What's going on here? We need him to be more aggressive. That was something that I think was a question surrounding him coming out of Iowa State. And I think that him going to an Indiana team where, like you said, he's very clearly handed the keys, asked to be the guy, has been huge for his development. And I don't know if that would have fully happened in Sacramento alongside a guy like De'Aaron Fox. So I think that while I was very much a believer that they would have worked it out together, I think them separating from one another ended up being for the best. And it's going to be TBD to see how far the Sacramento Kings team can go, because Sabonis is amazing on the offensive end. I think when he's your five, you're kind of sacrificing a lot on the defensive end and hoping to beat teams on offense, which is a lot of what we've seen. So it is still up in the air in my mind on how to view this trade long term. And it's kind of looking like this might be a rare win-win, but still TBD. We're going to see how good Tyrese ends up being. Sabonis, if he ends up re-signing in Sacramento, I think will be a big swing. And I think that it's expected that he will, but still TBD. He's going to be a unrestricted free agent. So kind of still waiting to see what happens there and how far that the Kings can end up going with this Sabonis team.
Yeah, and if you throw it back a year, and you know, we're talking about different ways to fix the Celtics over here, one of the guys I looked at back then and was like, all right, this guy would be a perfect fit and unlocker for this offense that was so stagnant at the time was Sabonis. And you're thinking of all these different ways you can get that deal done. You're probably not giving up Brown for him, though. That's probably what it takes. And you're giving up Rob, like, does that get it done? And we're just going back and forth about all these possible deals that could have fixed the Celtics. It was hard to imagine the Pacers then giving up Sabonis for anything short of a star piece like that. And
giving up Halliburton is probably what it took to get it done. Like, I don't know if there was any other way the Kings could have gotten that done other than giving up a piece like that. So if you really want Sabonis, and they certainly did and looked at that guy as a centerpiece for themselves going in the future, you had to be that aggressive, and they were. But you do look back and wonder, like, could you have done something with Fox? Or, you know, and that's the tricky thing is, like, you look at those two players in Fox and Halliburton at the time, you got a guy on a big contract, and Fox wasn't really meeting his potential at that time. And Halliburton was on this rookie deal with all this upside. And, you know, to your point, can they figure it out together? I don't have a strong take on that. I don't really know how that would have developed over time. I don't think there was a huge rush on Sacramento's part there if they did want to see it kind of grow and develop like a Tatum and a Brown. But in terms of how you could have gotten it done without Halliburton in there, like, I don't know. Would Indiana have considered a Fox? Picks? Like that's just what I go back to, because I just love Halliburton that much. And I see his upside being that great that you almost wonder if there was another way to do this, or if you could have just gone forward with Fox and Halliburton and seen where that took you long term.
My impression is that they would have preferred to move De'Aaron over Tyrese, but with him already being on that max contract extension, I think there was a pretty significant difference in their value, understandably so. And the Kings, like, Tyrese is a great piece. I mean, we've talked about it. Like, Tyrese is a great player and understandably has really high value, but the Kings also moved off from Buddy Hield, who is playing really well right now in Indiana, but I think it was important that he was moved on from. I think that he had become just a little, he thought that he was going to be traded for the last couple years. And I think that got to Buddy a little bit. And I don't think that he was the most impactful towards the end of his career in Sacramento. And there was a lot of things out of his control. But the Kings got Sabonis without giving up a single pick. They actually got second rounders back in that deal. And obviously, again, Tyrese is a great piece and the reason that was the case. But I think if it was, say, something revolving around De'Aaron, I don't know how Indiana would feel about that with Tyrese being a lot younger. And clearly they're trying to reset a little bit, even though they have rolled off a lot of wins to start this season. And then it would have been a crazier amount of draft picks probably in there as well. And I think Sacramento's in a position where they gave up their one pick for Herter, and that does have protections that go down a couple years that make things a little bit complicated. But, you know, we could see with this Sabonis trade that they did for Tyrese, they still have their draft picks available to them that maybe they'll go out and take another big swing down the line.
Yeah, and that's a good place to be. You know, you have a relatively young core with those two. You get Herter as a pretty solid starter next to those guys. And this all stems back to that Cousins trade, which was weird looking at the time, but when it flows into a complete team like this and their best team probably in a couple of decades here now, is pretty impressive how it's come together. And this little underbelly of youth on this roster too that I find interesting, like Keegan Murray. Another move that I think, like, had everybody falling out of their chairs, passing up on Ivy there and, you know, other potential options. And he looked great in summer league. The numbers aren't amazing to start this year, but watching him through the different settings that I have so far, like, his physique's really impressive. He's got a lot of skills at that wing position that's so important in the league now that could really grow and become something, maybe even the best player on this team eventually. But early in his career, what are you seeing from him and the ways they're using him and just sort of the kind of up and down production from a numbers standpoint that he's put out so far? I know he had that injury to start the year too.
Yeah, he had COVID at the beginning of the year that held him out for the opener. He had a little bit of a back strain the other day that kept him out for a game as well. But like you said, he started the preseason amazingly. He was great in summer league. And honestly, in those first four games that the Kings all lost, he was playing really well during that stretch as well. And it looked like, man, maybe the whole NBA ready that was kind of the pitch. And I think most appealing thing about Keegan Murray is totally accurate. And then I think what we've seen recently is kind of just the typical rookie adjustment period. You know, I mentioned like how much ball movement there is in the Sacramento offense. They're a really high paced offense, not only in the open court, but in the half court. There's so much movement and things are happening so quickly that I think that has just been a little bit of an adjustment period for Keegan. And defensively, they're asking a lot of him. You know, last game they played against Atlanta, they're starting him on DeJounte Murray. They played a game against Cleveland earlier this year. They're starting him guarding Donovan Mitchell. Like they're asking a lot of him, and he's had good moments on like flashes of being switched on to Steph Curry and not getting cooked. You know, like I think that anybody is going to have a tough time being switched on to Steph, but he did as good a job as you could ask from a rookie. Like he, in that second game against the Clippers that they played this year, they lost because they missed a ridiculous amount of free throws, lost by 2 points, but Keegan was guarding Paul George pretty well at the end of that game. So I think we've seen a lot of flashes, and a lot of what's going on right now in my mind is just typical rookie growing pains. He also is very close with his family. This is the first time he's a twin. This is the first time he's been separated from his twin to this extent. He does have off the court family things going on as well, with some health issues with his grandma that happened while they were at a game in Charlotte that I think is probably impacting him a bit. So I don't really have too many worries. There are definitely questions of should I thought Jaden Ivey should have been the pick of the time. And I still kind of sit there, and obviously Benedict Mathurin is playing great on Indiana as well. So I think it's still questionable on what the outcome of this pick will end up looking like a couple years down the line, but I don't really have any concerns about Keegan Murray's kind of up and down start. I think he's had a lot going on, and I kind of think it's just typical rookie adjustment periods, and would expect like a Harrison Barnes type player at very least down the line.
Yeah, and he's coming up next to Barnes, which probably helps if he's going to become that. But it's interesting. It's all about like where you see the team going with a pick like that, because you fall to four in the lottery. You end up at four in the lottery, rather. You obviously hope you win it, but you avoid the Chet Holmgren injury, even if you look at him being a long-term better player potentially there. And Jabari Smith, man, like the fact that he could have gone one in this class and he's off to the start he is. Again, it's so early, but I was looking at the Raptor ratings the other day, and he's last in the league out of every player right now that qualifies there. Like, it's just been a brutal start for him in Houston. So you look at that pick there, and it's not looking so bad. Everybody would have loved Banchero the way he's looking early on, but it's not always going to stack up in the order that everybody's picked there. And it looks like he's a pretty good bet, especially at a position that they need. And that's the tricky thing there, is if you're comparing Ivy and Murray directly, is that obviously the Kings need a wing to emerge now and become a great player next to those guards. They're in the position now where it looks like they're going to try to start winning in the near future here. So you almost rather have a guy, even if Ivy becomes a little bit of a better player, or even a significantly better player long term, as long as Murray fits on that wing spot for them and is a stable starter there long term, that might help more than having Ivy kind of stashed on the bench. Like, I almost look at Davion Mitchell, who's starting to show a little bit more this year, it seems like, but he's behind Fox and he's behind Halliburton a year ago and other guys in this backcourt. And if he's in another situation where he's starting and getting the room to operate on a team that kind of Murray is here, he might even be a better player by this point. So like, that opportunity and that need thing in the draft is always tricky, because you want to get the best player possible. But Ivy probably doesn't play as much here as he is in Detroit right now.
Yeah, and probably doesn't get the same opportunities. You might run into some of the same issues you had with Fox and Tyrese alongside each other. I think that they would function fine in this free-flowing offense. But it's no secret that the Kings are very clearly trying to get back to the postseason as quick as possible. And I think there's some moments that we've seen that maybe I feel like they're being a little bit too short-sighted, because I think that in team building, you should still have the long-term plan or aim of being a team that can contend for Western conference finals sort of thing. And I question if Sacramento is in a spot where their ceiling maybe doesn't quite reach that, but the start of this year has totally changed that around. But you can see sort of some of the short-sightedness even in these last three picks. Like, Keegan Murray was a safe option, right? One of the more NBA-ready guys and a little bit of a fit pick. They very much need wings, as you pointed out. Like we said all throughout last year, that the Kings need another Harrison Barnes, and they kind of went and drafted another Harrison Barnes. And then the year prior, Davion Mitchell being picked, I think is also one of those more NBA-ready guys, and you just know that he's an NBA player. You go back to the year prior, I think anybody would have picked Tyrese when he fell to 11, but that's also a little bit of a safer pick. So I think that they definitely have put a lot of effort into wanting to get back to the playoffs and really just get this stink off of their franchise that's been surrounding them and all the Kings memes and that are justified and everything. Like, I think that it was really important to them to just get back to being a respectable team, and they've done that so far.
Yeah, and that's sort of where the Harder trade comes from, right? That I guess if you want to call it short-sightedness or whatever it is, just that fixation on getting back to the playoffs, which is why I hated the Sabonis trade so much at the time. It almost felt like a win-now move in a year where they were in a play-in push kind of situation, and they didn't even make the play-in. But obviously, there's years to operate beyond that first year with him there. This pick that they give the Hawks, this is always tricky. The protections that go back year after year after year. So it's what, top 14 in 2024, then it kicks to 25, 26, and then in 27 it becomes, or 26, 27, it becomes second round picks. So that's 3 years where your first round pick's tied up, which is always, it always makes it tough if you want to make another move down the line. You have to sort of, I guess, go back to that other team and adjust some of those protections or hope that it conveys next year. Like, that's always a tricky way to set up a trade where, like, you tie yourself up for several years, only even though you're only giving up one pick there. And Herder, I don't know what you've kind of thought about his contribution so far. He's a guy a lot of people in Boston would have loved to have seen on the Celtics, and I think a lot of people around the league love his defense on top of the shooting. But that's another one. It's like, all right, how much does this help you long term? How great does this make you in the immediate term? And what's kind of the cost you're giving up of 3 years of picks potentially there that you really can't move on from if you want to make another move beyond this?
Yeah, like you said, they could try to go back and renegotiate and maybe take those protections off and just like make it an unprotected 2024 if they were feeling good about their team and had another move lined up that they wanted to make. But I think ideally that they aren't in the bottom 14 in 2024 and then it ends up conveying there and then kind of clears up from that point. And it wouldn't surprise me if when we're at the point of the draft that the Kings end up maybe trying to shop around that pick, because on draft night, they don't have to worry about Stepien rules in the same sort of way, kind of just pick for someone else and then end up moving it there. So I think they still do have ways to kind of make moves if something does end up becoming available. But Herter's been great, man. I think he's been worth everything that they paid, which really is just that draft pick. Justin Holiday and Maurice Harkless weren't making much of an impact on Sacramento last year. And the big question for Herter was, is he somebody that's comfortable and willing to take more shots? Like, when Sacramento acquired him, I had, you know, kind of a slight question of, man, could this guy sneak his way into like most improved player conversations? Because I think he's really talented and maybe not limited by Atlanta, but sort of put in a role where I wondered if he was asked to do more, would he be capable of doing that? And that's absolutely what we've seen. I mean, he's at 7.4 3-point attempts per game, knocking down 49.6%. Like, it's ridiculous volume. I haven't looked after last game, but he was the top guy in the league on high volume threes, and they're totally going down. You mentioned the defense that I was pretty excited about coming into when he was first acquired by Sacramento. In Atlanta, they had him guarding point of attack, and a lot of that has to do with Trae Young being a pretty bad option at that. But I think Herter has had a little bit of an adjustment period when it comes to the defense, and maybe isn't quite the defender I expected, but he's also not a liability while he's out there or anything. And his offensive production is ridiculous. Like, the shooting, obviously, that he provides, not only off catch and shoot, but off movement. He can do it off the bounce and take these ridiculous step back threes from crazy range. He's a really smart player who is an underrated passer. Coach Brown talked about how Herter's passes always go to his teammates' shooting pockets, which is really important for getting good shots off. And he's also setting really good screens. I mentioned the offense being pretty close to what Golden State had run in years prior. And you see like Curry setting a lot of screens and their shooters setting a lot of screens and making things happen from there. And I think Herter's totally bought into doing that. He's not quite a three-level scorer. He's not great at the rim, but in my mind, as long as you're a two-level scorer, then you can't just have one taken away. And Herter does have a really nice mid-range, kind of getting closer to that rim and improving that part of his game. But he's been phenomenal on offense, and he's still 24 years old, first year of a four-year contract for him. So I think they did a good job taking advantage of Atlanta wanting to shed some salary and having a little bit of a logjam at that position. And Herter's been great for them.
Yeah, and that's what's so special about Sabonis. If you do have guard screeners, and his passing ability is just so great that whether he's in the post or that high post, they're going to be able to do so much around a guy like that. And takes pressure off Fox, takes pressure off some of the secondary ball handlers there. They're going to be fun to watch all year on that end, I think. But what's the upside for this team? The defense is lagging a bit, and that's the thing about these two teams coming into here is they're both just like crushing teams offensively every game, playing at a higher pace, which I think lends itself to not having the best defense in the world. But both of these teams, I think, probably look at themselves and are like, man, we gotta tighten up that defensive end if we want to go far here. And that's especially, I think, true for the Kings right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Basketball Reference has their defense rating at 26th. They've been pretty bad in that aspect. They've only won one game where they've put up 113 or less this year. It seems like their recipe for winning games is just putting up 120 plus. And that's not the most sustainable. I think that when it comes to regular season success, that you can keep that up a bit to an extent. But I think when you're talking postseason basketball, that you could totally just get picked apart by opposing teams on the defensive end. But with Sacramento's current postseason drought, I think that talking about postseason struggles and getting to there in the first place would totally be viewed as a success. So I think that they have started to clean up some things on that end, but a lot of it has to do with just, I kind of think, what you're sacrificing with Sabonis. You know, they don't have great perimeter defense, but they really just have no rim protection on this roster at all. And I think that's a function of running Sabonis at the five. And the idea is that maybe down the line, they can try to get a four who can protect the rim, but then they also need to be a capable offensive player. And I think that's a pretty rare archetype in the league. So if they can end up finding someone like that, maybe this can end up getting turned around. But I think that right now, they're just trying to do enough to let their offense carry games. And they've had some moments of being able to do that. I actually thought on this road trip against Memphis and Atlanta, they had some of their better defensive quarters. They also had a couple pretty bad ones, but that third quarter in Memphis, I think they held them to 17 points. The fourth quarter in Atlanta, they held them to 18 points. And those are some of the better defensive quarters that the Kings have had. And a lot of that does have to do with Davion Mitchell. But I think that they've had their flashes, but definitely the recipe for this team is do just enough on defense that their offense can carry them.
Yeah, and I'm looking, you know, a couple of years back now at the top offenses in the league, and it doesn't translate for the most part. Like last year, it's Utah and at Atlanta. No postseason success there. 2 years ago, it is Brooklyn, who maybe could have rode that to the championship if they were healthy, though I still doubt it. In Portland, who didn't do much. 2020, it was that Clippers team that blew that big lead in the second round to Denver, and Dallas, who lost that first round series. And then 19, you get the Warriors. So that's sort of when you'll go back and look at a team that was just really overpowering offensively, riding their way to the championship. And that might be what these Celtics are capable of. Like, I look at these Celtics and I think there's so much firepower here and so much stardom and so much creation that they might be able to do that Warriors thing with just enough defense to roll to the finals. But in terms of some of these regular season mashers, like the Kings, you probably need to develop a little bit more balance to be able to hope to make a postseason run, at least just looking at recent history here.
Totally agreed. I keep looking at that 2020-21 Atlanta Hawks team, which ironically Herter was a part of, but they were second in offensive rating and 26th in defensive rating. Team got 43 wins, ninth in the East. They won the play-in and they got bounced 4-1 to Miami in the first round. And I think that's sort of what we're talking about with this Kings team right now. Like I think that their offense is legit. I think it's sustainable of being a top five offense throughout the course of the year. It's just about, can they somehow sneak their way like out of the bottom 10 on defense? And right now there's been flashes, but I think that that still totally needs to be pieced together. But honestly, like a ninth seed and losing in the first round of the playoffs, I think is a big step in the right direction for this Kings team.
All right. So out East here, I mean, we've all heard about it. We've all seen it, but I don't think we really get it. At least I don't. What's the beam all about? What is going on out there? What is this phenomenon going on in Sacramento after the wins?
Yeah, so after every win, home or road games, there's a beam on top of Golden 1 Center that they light up into the sky. And it's actually not that dark or anything. From up close, it looks really good, but you don't have to get that far away to not be able to see it really well, because they have a lot of FDA restrictions, so they're not messing with any planes above or anything like that. The airport's not too far. But it's just a fun thing. I honestly think it's pretty ballsy that the team decided to do this. And like, they have a YouTube series they've been putting out called The Run. It's kind of
behind
the scenes.
Was this new for this year?
The Beam?
Yeah.
Yes. Totally new for this year. And to me, that's like, they were betting that this was going to be the year it kind of turned around. And luckily it has been so far. So it's just kind of been a little bit of a fun thing, that they've totally rallied around. I think Herder was the one that posted Beam Team on his Instagram, and they've been rolling with that.
Yeah, and it looks like a guy kind of gets to light after every game. I think I saw whatever that is. So,
well, gets to light it. It's kind of just like a circle that they put a sticker on, and he smacks it, and they light it at the same time, but we'll go with it.
All right. Let's talk a little Celtics, but first, of course, brought to you here by Athletic Greens. Head over to athleticgreens.com/garden for a year's supply of vitamin D, immune boosting, and 5 free travel packs. They're a great powder, vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more in there. Good way to get a fresh start after Thanksgiving on your health, energy, and just habits in terms of your diet there. And all of it's going to supplement you a little bit in each area that you could go out there and get individually, but it all comes together in AG1. Great taste. Just pour it in your water every morning, throw it back, and you got everything you need. That's athleticgreens.com/garden, as well as the Calm app, calm.com/garden. Stressful time of year. It's Black Friday today. If you're out there shopping in those lines, which I never would be, you got to go and reset yourself midday with the Calm of the day. If it's meditation in the morning, that's for you. They got that as well as bedtime stories, sleep sounds. It's all there, and it's all 40% off, a great deal. If that wants to be, if you want that to be your gift for someone, it's a great deal as well. Calm.com/garden, 40% off a premium subscription. So Brennan, I mean, this segment, like, there's not really much interest to it right now. Like, this Celtics team's just a wagon. They smoked Dallas on Wednesday in this just uncompetitive game against a team that looked like, you know, with Luka, they were going to be able to at least hang with the Celtics at home. And they go down 27. They make this late rally that never really built into anything legitimate. And so, you know, everybody I have coming on around the league here just jumps on and says, this team's amazing. It looks like they're just going to roll here. And I almost start to wonder with this Celtics team, if they get healthy, Rob comes back, which looks like it's going to happen by Christmas, as Woj said. Brogdon's healthy again. Smart's back. You're pretty much going to have a full squad once Rob's in that mix. Is this team just going to run away with the league if they're healthy here, the way they're playing right now offensively, and you think they can get back to defensively?
I mean, I think they have a decent chance of maybe not running away and clearly leading all the competition, but I think that pretty obviously kind of being in that top tier. You know, I think obviously Robert Williams coming back will be really big for their defense. He was such a staple of that last year, sort of playing in that free safety role. And their offensive creation is off the charts. You know, I think that the additions they've had throughout the last 2 years, thinking specifically Brogdon and Derek White, I think are just perfect fits for this team. When it comes to like the matchup with the Kings, and I think this translates to a lot of teams, it's hard to have guys that can cover both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like, typically I feel like teams will have one good option, and then after that, it gets a little bit tough. And I'd guess like Harrison Barnes on Tatum, and maybe they throw Keegan Murray on Jaylen Brown. And I don't think the latter matchup will go very well in favor of Sacramento. So we'll kind of see what ends up happening there. But I think that the Celtics will probably end up right towards the top of the league. A lot of that X factor to me is how Robert Williams returns, but I'm a big Milwaukee guy. I think that if they weren't hurt last year, that we very well could have seen them end up repeating. So I think that they definitely have teams they'll be competing with, but they've been rolling for sure. And Robert Williams still not even being a part of that is definitely big.
Yeah, and I guess if I'm going to nitpick here on them recently, the depth's interesting. Like, they have great depth 1 through 7 or so, 1 through 8, once Rob comes back probably. But you get a little bit below that. They didn't play any backup bigs against Dallas, so they're leaning on Horford pretty hard in Rob's absence. The three options they have there behind Blake Vonleh, as well as Luke Kornet, who's had some flashes, haven't been the best in the world. So, you know, I hear some buzz, Brian Windhorst, talking about Jakob Poeltl. They've obviously used their own first-round pick going after Brogdon last year. They have a future one owed to San Antonio from that White deal as well. So maybe Jakob Poeltl is the right choice. You could take some protections off that 28 pick, throw some more in, send some salary back. Gallinari's still out there if they want to use that. They have some TPEs. But you do have a pretty deep roster here. So the question they're going to face, it seems like, is obviously this team's ready to win a championship. Obviously, if you need to add something, you're going to do it. But there's so much here already. Does adding to it kind of take away? I think Brad's talked about that in the past. Is it worth throwing extra picks at a guy who maybe doesn't have a big role when this group's healthy? Do you bring in a guy at the wing who's going to need the ball? Sam Hauser's kind of their backup wing right now, which is working right now. But come playoff time, I don't know. Like, guys do score on him. I know he's gotten better defensively, but they can go at him and attack him. And all of that stuff becomes a little bit more highlighted come playoff time. If we look back at the finals, this great roster last year, too, just got a little bit tighter. Like, White kind of became irrelevant. Grant certainly did in the finals. You saw Horford kind of get taken out of the game offensively. So you're probably looking at this roster saying, all right, do we have to add to this a little bit? Add some insurance, add some firepower off the bench? Or do you just kind of stick with what you have here and hope that it's going to keep rolling?
I mean, I think maybe some marginal moves kind of to just help with the regular season. But to me, when you have a sort of eight guys that you feel good about, that that's a recipe for success in the postseason. And I think that surviving the regular season is a little bit of a different story. And maybe there's something I think I looked earlier in the year prior to the season starting, I think Alex Len fit into a TPE the Celtics had, for example, something small like that. I could see maybe being, again, marginal moves, but I think having eight guys that you feel really good about is totally a recipe for success in the postseason. And it seems to be working well right now. If they can find somebody else that fits into their scheme and being a good defender and complementary offensive player, like they have found with White and Brogdon, I don't see why it would hurt to add another. But to me, my outside perspective is specifically if Robert Williams comes back and can find his way into a consistent role in the rotation again, that I think the depth is maybe something that will hurt you in some regular season games, like second nights of back-to-backs, which is something the Kings just dealt with in Atlanta. They don't have great depth themselves. That maybe it hurts you here and there, but I think that postseason, which is probably what's most important for the Celtics team, I'd imagine that 7, 8, maybe 9 guys is a fine recipe in my mind.
Yeah. The only one that you think about is that insurance debt piece at big, just because of Rob's health, Horford's age. That makes a lot of sense to me. The Kings do have 1 million centers. I don't know what the Alex Len I've liked in the past. Doesn't look like he really has a role there. Raquan Holmes, that one's interesting. I don't know what happened there. He was the starter on this team a couple years ago, and now I guess he's just not really much of a piece for them. I know he had some legal issues off the floor and stuff like that. What happened there?
Yeah, his legal stuff did end up clearing up. There were no charges pressed or anything like that. But when it comes to his on-court performance, he just doesn't really fit what the Kings are trying to do. I think that if it's a team that runs a lot of pick and roll, we saw his push shot really develop the last couple years.
I love that push shot.
Yeah, the push shot was pretty great. Doug Christie, who used to be on the broadcast, now part of the coaching staff, used to always say it was patent pending. And Holmes is so good at that push shot, but I think he does have to get set up for it and run a lot of pick and roll and get put in spots where he can finish plays. And the Kings run so much through their big and ask a lot of playmaking. They like to play this 0.5 offense was just making decisions in 0.5 seconds. And I don't know that really caters to Holmes's strengths and defensively. He hasn't looked great, which has been a little bit of a mystery. I think that there's probably some frustration on his end for him getting not the contract that he maybe wanted in the off season. And there was complications there with his agent that he ended up letting go after that off season. And then also Sabonis getting acquired and his role just disappearing for that reason, really, rather than him doing anything wrong. So Chimezie Metu has emerged as the backup five for this team. And I think we'll probably see it stick that way. But I still think Holmes can be a top 20 center in the league, which sounds crazy, but after like the top eight, it really becomes this huge group of guys. But I do think that Holmes benefits most from a team that plays a lot of pick and roll, so he can be put in a position to be a play finisher where he's one of the most efficient guys in the league. And then defensively, I do think that he's pretty solid on switching. So he's the guy for sure. I look at on this Kings team, and it's in my mind, he'll end up in a different place prior to the trade deadline.
Yeah, you wonder where that'll be with those limitations, with that contract. Bigger than I expected, $11 million this year, $12 million next, almost $13 million the year after that. That's hefty for a center now, especially a role guy as he's become here. And Jakob Poeltl actually makes less. I think Robert Williams makes less than that too. The center hierarchy in the league in terms of salary is pretty wacky. How much does Steven Adams make? That was a weird one too when he got that extension before we get out of here. He makes... for Memphis, $18 million. That center mark is pretty wacky. It's all over the place what those guys are making now. He's Brendan Nunes. You can check him out on Kings coverage tonight and always at Kings Herald, as well as the Kings Pulse podcast. He is Brendan, B-R-E-N-D-N-D-E-N, Nunes, NBA on Twitter. Brendan, great having you on here. Great catching up, and keep up the good work out there.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Bobby, and hopefully we get a fun matchup tonight. I think it's first of 1:30 wins.
Yep, there we go. 8 o'clock. We'll see you then.